Okay. Let me get settled in my chair. Nice, comfy chair. Always like this chair. It is conducive to good broadcasting. Even though I don't know, I mean, this is really not broadcasting, is it? This is podcasting. There is a difference. Broadcasting is broad, wide, and podcasting is a small. You're in a pod. It's confined. I wonder if that's where the pod of podcast came from, because it's confined and small and concentrated, as opposed to a broadcast, which is wide and broad. This could go wide and broad if enough people download it and listen to it, but at its core, I guess it is not. It's not narrowcasting, which was kind of a takeoff on broadcasting, because it can be listened to by millions of people. I'm gonna make, maybe I'll do some research into that. Right, Reggie? I hope you appreciate the broadcasting lesson, Reginald. Broadcasting 101 right there, giving you the nuances and the differences between a podcast and a broadcast and a narrowcast. I could have just charged you for that. At some colleges, that costs $400 right there. That's the first day. That's first day of class. Broadcasting versus podcasting. Who will win? Question mark. That's the name of the class right there. I just gave you the first 3 minutes. I just set the tone for that class. You're welcome. Well, let's do some broadcasting slash narrowcasting slash podcasting right now, okay? Put it in the book. This is episode 170, 170. Wow, that is pretty cool. Yes. Yeah, I'm looking. Hello? Yeah. Yes. Oh, I don't know. Wait, oh my goodness. For a second there, did you see that? Did you see that? What's it say there? What? Whoa. Wow, what does it say? What's happening? Low battery.
Oh.
Wow. See that? Good thing. On this power pack, it was a low battery. I just put the switch and now we're fine. Whoa, that would have been scary. I would have been in a roll here when the podcast started, and then we would have run out of power. I mean, I wouldn't have run out of power. Talent always has power. But the machinery here, wow, okay. Thank you, machinery, for that little heads up. Very good. All right. Now the levels look good. Before, about 2 minutes, 2 seconds ago, they did not look good. That's why we do this before we start. You see, everybody says, Jim, why do you start the podcast and we hear all this behind-the-scenes stuff? First of all, I think it's kind of fun that you just hear what goes on before the mics are hot, per se, when it starts up. I always like backstage stuff, so I give you a little hint of that when we're, you know, just getting ready. So I always thought, I think that's always fun and give you a little flavor of that. But also, you see the importance of what we do here before this gets started. We've checked the levels. We check our equipment, because we could have had a major snafu there. And look up snafu. That's a snafu. And that was a war term. And it's all caps. Look up snafu if you don't know what it means. It's pretty funny. But anyway, let's do it. Three S's, episode 170. Ready? Star, smile, strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting, not broadcasting, not narrowcasting pleasure, but podcasting pleasure. See what I did there, folks? See how you incorporate stuff that you may have talked about off mic, and you incorporate it into the show? That's Reggie, just so you know, that's another episode. It's another class. It's another lesson. You are learning right now. This is Broadcasting 101. No, it's not. It's podcasting. Anyway, welcome to episode 170 here at Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Thank you for downloading, scrolling, clicking, whatever it is you do to find us on a regular basis. Your loyalty is much appreciated. If you want to hear more of this podcast, previous podcast, just go to WGNplus.com, go to the entertainment section, hit the Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic prompt, and there you will find all previous 169 episodes. Which, as I said before then, could only mean one thing. We are at 170, episode 170 of the podcast. Today, I wanted to discuss something that happened to me and see if you can't relate to it as well. We were right before the podcast started, in case you don't listen right at the very beginning. We almost had a little electronic equipment problem that would have reared its head as we continued to record. And but thankfully, before we get started, we check everything, and we fixed it, and now everything should be fine. But it really is funny. I wasn't expecting that at all, but it actually segues nicely into one of the topics I wanted to talk today. Is how dependent we are on some devices and some technologies that we don't even realize it until we don't have them. They become very quickly, they become integral parts of our daily lifestyle, and we don't even realize them. And that's the technology that I do like. And I do embrace, and I am dependent on, and I am excited about and impressed by. Every so often here, you will hear me talk about other technologies and other things, and I, you know, I'm kind of either down on them or at least pointing out some possible inefficiencies or possible dangers. And it may sound like I'm anti-technology, but I certainly am not. And like everyone else, I incorporate many technologies into my life. It's impossible not to, and it's foolish not to. And some of the more useful technologies that we rely on every day are a tribute to the American spirit, to the American vision. The human vision, the human innovation, human ambition, human creativity. To look beyond. That is one of our greatest assets as human beings. It is something that sets us apart from other species. We do have this amazing brain in our head. And I've said many times, it is responsible for us achieving some incredible accomplishments. And it's also responsible for us doing some horrendous things. The brain is both our greatest enemy and our greatest asset. It is what separates us from the other species on this planet. And in many ways, it is also what unites us and reminds us that we really are a part of the animal kingdom and that we do have many of those primitive instincts that are still permanently and indelibly stamped into our genetic code. But at the same time, our brain also allows us to find nuance and not just act instinctually, but also use logic and thinking, which many times the animal kingdom does not have the amount of power in that area of logic and thought and deliberation and free will that we do. But at the same time, there's many times when we act on pure instinct, just like the animals do. So that's what I think is amazing about the brain. It is something that has allowed us to be elevated, but at the same time, we do see that our behavior many times is as bad or not, or is just like the animals in terms of acting on instinct. And many times it's worse. We act purely on instinct without using logical thought. And we see the sad and sometimes brutal results of that. But the brain is an amazing, the human brain is an amazing gift that hopefully we use more for better than worse. And yes, I do embrace technology. I'm not a Luddite. I do not, I'm not anti. But as I say many times, when I embrace a technology, and I do embrace technology, it is the ones, the technologies that I feel really do make a difference and do make our lives easier, and they do fill a need. What I find today about a lot of technology, it's not because we have to do it, it's because we can do it. And to me, a lot of that is superfluous, and a lot of it's flashy. And it sort of blurs and gets in the way. And many times, I think it actually keeps us from moving forward and developing useful technologies, because the because we can technologies many times are more fun and on their face initially very cool. And that inspires people. And many times, you know, the inventors can either get rich by them or at least be viral and get cool by them, but they're not really pushing the envelope forward. They're not really pushing society forward. But because there is a short-term advantage that people with these kind of talents get from creating superfluous types of technologies, that's where a lot of the invention or innovation comes from. And sadly, it sometimes takes a backseat to some of the kind of innovation and invention that we need. Like, for instance, what I think is, and I'm so glad that it's finally being embraced, because I've been screaming about this for 30 years. If you listen with any regularity, you can notice I scream about a lot of things. And eventually, society catches up with me. That's that's what's frustrating about being an early adapter, or at least someone, I guess, who I just sort of, I strip through all the BS and get right down to the nut of things. And sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad, I guess. I don't know. But I've been screaming for years, for instance, we're talking about technology, useful technologies. What I think is one of the greatest technologies that has been around in the last 35, 40 years, whatever it may be, is the use of ultrasounds, for instance, for pregnancies, right? I think that's an amazing technology. It's a useful technology, and that's my point. It's a useful technology, and it does help, not just to, tell the sex of a child, but also to give some sense that there could be a problem with the pregnancy, to give people a choice to begin to decide what they want to do, or at the very least, give them a heads up to let them know that, there's a problem here and you're going to have to, we should start already, even if the baby perhaps is in the womb, to accept it and begin to deal with how is that going to change things and what decisions will you make. But at the very least, at its very basic use, the ultrasound, which then has been used for other things now, for other types of organs, and I've had an ultrasound on different parts of my body, so it's turned out to be, I think, a very useful tool. But what I think at the base, the baseline for the ultrasound is that it allowed parents, if they wanted, to see the sex of their child, right? And so when this first came available, because there were so many, it was still, this old tradition that many people hung on to. Well, I don't want to know until it's born. They didn't use that. And that used to be a big question and still is. But I see that fading away. Millennials, God bless you. You have embraced technology as you have in every other aspect of your life. You've embraced technology and you have seen the logic that I've been applying to it for years, as opposed to subscribing to old traditions or old superstitions or whatever you want to call them. The reason that we as humans were surprised about the birth of our children until the child literally was born and came out of the womb was because that's the only alternative we had, right? We had no way of knowing what the sex of the baby was before it came out. So because that was reality, we as humans then, as we are wont to do, we create traditions around things that happen. And so the tradition came that it was a big surprise, even though everybody always wanted to know what it was. And if you remember, at least in my lifetime, I remember these silly, superstitious games that people would play. They would, dangle a ring over the woman's stomach, and if it swung a certain way, they'd say, oh, you're going to have a boy, or you're going to have a girl. And people would say, oh, you're hanging low, you're hanging high, whatever, it's going to be a girl. There was all this great wonder and questioning to the point of fun, all based on nothing. There was no reality to it at all. It was superstition. It was guessing. It was silliness. But it became our tradition because we had no alternative. We had no way of looking into the body and seeing what the sex was. So we created all these games, or at least we created this idea that it was exciting and fun and traditional that you don't find out what the sex of the baby is until it's born, that you like to wait until the birth, even though throughout the 9 months, that's all anybody's wondering or thinking. But because we didn't have the technology, we decided that, well, that was the way to do it. Well, no, it wasn't. It was the only way we had. And then somebody comes along and creates this amazing device called the ultrasound. And suddenly we can tell the parents very early on in the pregnancy whether they're having a boy or a girl. And this is information that every parent has always wanted to have, and has played silly games, superstitious games, or guessing games, and dangling rings over people's stomachs, or looking at their stomachs, and you look like the baby's lower, and all this other stuff. But now we had a device that took all that silliness out of things and just said, here's your answer. No guessing. Don't have to wait 9 months. Don't have to pretend or have, silly superstitions or silly games to play. Here it is. And while that was available, and some people took advantage of it, other people said, no, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I want to be surprised. But you didn't want to be surprised. You were clinging to this old tradition for no reason. And actually, you know, because we are so intent on many of our traditions, our religious traditions, everything else, that if you did, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, have the ultrasound done and know and be told what it was, and you told people, they almost looked at you like you were, you know, crazy, or that, oh, well, you did that? Like this baby thing was some kind of an amusement park ride. I was always of the camp as, you know, for instance, when a woman's pregnant, they would always say, you know, he or she, and we'd have different names. If it's a boy, it's this. Well, we know what it is now. We can already have our names, and we can think, and we know if it's a boy, thanks to the ultrasound, we don't have to even think of girl names. Why bother? Right? Let's just think of boys' names. And we don't have to wonder what to decorate the children's room in. We don't have to have neutral colors if we're going to do the room before. If it's a boy and we want to have a more masculine-looking room, then we do that. But my point is, this ultrasound provided you with great information, essential information that you certainly wanted, and it was, you know, 99.9% accurate. It wasn't depending on which way a ring on a chain swung over somebody's stomach. I mean, that's Dark Ages stuff. And so to me, it's like, why wouldn't you want that? You could start talking to this child as a he or a she while it's still being developed inside. You know, that to me is an amazing capability, and you're already treating this baby, this human being in your body, as a human being, not as some mystery thing that's going on. You know, hi Tommy, hi Mary. I can't wait to see you in 5-6 more months. You can already become a parent in a meaningful way, at least beginning that kind of a connection, of one-on-one connection with your child. If you know the sex of it, you can already begin to be treating it like the person it will become to be. And to me, that's really important too, because so often everybody is really excited about having a baby. I don't know how excited people are about having kids. Everybody wants a baby. They're the cutest things on earth. They have all the little chubby legs and the little chubby calves, and they have no ankles and they have no elbows, and they have big cheeks and gummy smiles and bald heads and big eyes. Who can't love a baby? What I find interesting is a lot of parents, by the time they're 10 or 12 or 15, are kind of sighing. And some of them give up long before that. And maybe the part of that is because, you know what, they treated it like it was just some kind of a temporary thing. Oh, a baby is cool. No, the sooner that you identify and begin to treat that baby as a person who's going to live for 60 or 70 years, and who's going to depend on you in many ways, emotionally, financially, whatever it is, the quicker you create that bond and you accept that responsibility as a parent, the better you'll be. So why wouldn't you want to know what sex that baby is as soon as you can? But people, you know, even 20 years ago, 15 years ago, still, oh, we don't want to know. We want the surprise. For what? It's not a surprise. This is not some game you're playing. You're bringing a life into the world. Be serious about it. If you're reading baby books about all this stuff, but you don't want to know the sex of it until it's born, do you see how illogical that is? So technology gave us the chance to do away with superstition, to do away with silly games, and give us the information, useful information. A great invention. Technology at its best. One of the many things, but in my view, the ultrasound. And so now what I'm very heartened about is that because millennials certainly embrace technology, maybe to a fault, the ultrasound makes perfect sense to them. Because they're not steeped in these old traditions of let it be a surprise, because it doesn't have to be a surprise. We created the surprise, or we created the aura around the surprise of the birth of the baby, because we had no other choice. We couldn't tell what the sex was until it was born. So we as humans created this aura, this fun, this mystery. But it wasn't really needed. It was just we had no alternative. And we got an alternative. Some people still clung to it. But thankfully, the millennials are saying no. So what you see with many couples who are having their children, they have reveal parties to let everyone know what the baby is and celebrate that. I think that's a great idea. I mean, I think some of the parties obviously go overboard. I don't know if you have to have, you know, you have to spend $5,000 on a reveal party, but I think it's really cool that couples are finding, are they're using the available technology, finding out and knowing what their child is and becoming the parent of that child sooner than just when it comes out. By then, you better be prepared. So this gives you an extra 9 months or 7 months, whatever it is, when you can tell. But at least the idea of being a parent to a specific individual. Great invention. And kudos to everybody who uses the ultrasound and who finds out what the sex is, whether you have a reveal party or not. So that, to me, is an example of useful technology. There's so many apps around that to me are just done because we can. And they become fads, just like the pet rock. They're not really needed. They might be cool for a second, but they're really not essential. And I think you find out, I'm coming back to my point, folks. Yeah, hang on. You know, if you listen to me with any regularity, I'll take some detours, but the road does lead back. You realize, technology-wise, what is integral to your life, what technologies you do rely on, which are important, which do make your life easier, and which you rely on, even to the point that you don't even realize how much you do. They become so ubiquitous. They're so part of your daily routine that you don't even realize that, you know, hey, maybe 6 months ago or 5 years ago, I didn't have this capability, and now I can't imagine not having it. Or even if it's a long time, technology that maybe you just implemented for the first time, you realize, wow, this is something that makes life easier. And we don't really appreciate a lot of these technologies that make our lives easier on a daily basis until, for whatever reason, most of the time something breaks down and we have to get it fixed, that we don't have it for a day or 3 days or a week or sometimes 2 weeks. And we go, wow, holy cow. I never realized how much I use that one thing and how I don't even think about it. It's so part of my lifestyle. It's just it's a reaction at this point. It's an expectation. And as I'm talking about this, I could think of several that you just, you know, I mean, obviously the television, is one of those. And clearly in today's world, not so much for me, as I've talked about my beloved flip phone, which if you listen just to a couple of episodes, you go, not only did I contribute to the the destruction of my old flip phone, but I already have a new one. I do not have a smartphone, but that's another discussion. But certainly television and, you know, telephone communication. I won't even call it a telephone because it's not really a telephone anymore. People rarely use it to talk on. Your communication device, some people call a smartphone. I think we need to get a new name for it because it's not a phone. No one talks on it. Once again, don't get me started. but then just think about regular things. You know, if you have a garage, the electric garage door opener, right? You hit that button in your house or, you know, with your little transponder there. Instead of, I mean, there were people, you know, yes, there were times when you had to lift the garage door. I remember lifting the garage door and it was heavy. And even today, they're made of lighter materials, but it's still, you got to lift it up. But the electric door opener for a garage, amazing, right? Dishwasher, amazing. Gosh, I don't use one. My wife does, though. Electric toothbrush. I don't see why you can't use your hand, but a lot of people use them. My wife uses it every morning, doesn't think twice. You know, I mean, obviously the automobile, amazing. But let's even get more, you know, the radio, right? Let's get even, when you talk about the automobile, let's start to dig down. How about automatic locks? Automatic locks. You know, 20 years ago, not every car had that. Now, I don't know a car that doesn't have an automatic lock, and we just automatically hit that fob. Nobody even knew what a fob was. Now everybody knows what the word fob means. One time I was playing Scrabble with a friend of mine about 25 years ago and put the word fob down and argued with me there was no such word as fob. We had to go find a dictionary, and there it was. He did not know what a fob was. Now, electric locks, commonplace. Within a car, a lot of technologies, even just within your car, you know. Aside from all the Facebook, you know, that kind of technology on that screen now, but just the normal stuff. You know, think about it. The automatic window wipers. You're not doing that with your hand, right? How about the automatic rear view, you know, the side view mirror? How you can automate? I mean, you know, you just electronically do that. We used to do that by hand. Not a big deal, but once again, now you get in your car and you look at your mirrors, and if they're a little off, you go and you set your mirrors with that little button. There's so many things in our normal day. You know, think about when you go out to a store, the door automatically opens, right? You step on that pad, the door opens. Look at when you check out at a grocery store. You know, I used to be a checker when I was in college, in high school, you know, at a grocery store. We used to, I did the tail end. I started to use the scanners, but initially when I started, I was punching in prices with my fingers. You had to know that keyboard. Now, my gosh, when you go to a checkout line in a store, they're not even watching. They're just, their heads are everywhere looking around or just beep, beep. They don't even pay attention. And I did do a little scan. I was around for the introduction of the scanning. I didn't do it all that long. I didn't work that much longer after that. But wow. So every there's so many things around us that we take for granted. And so, I mean, my gosh, you know, look at the refrigerator, right? I don't remember this, of course. I'm way too young for that. But, you know, it used to be called an ice box because it was literally, you got a big giant block of ice that kept it cold. So these are amazing, amazing innovations, amazing technologies that we use every day. And yes, I know that on your phone, there are some apps that are useful. I believe there's also many that make life more complicated. My goal in life is least complication and least drama. Life has its own complications and its own dramas naturally. Why complicate your life with things that will make things more dramatic and more stressful? That's the way I look at it. And the more, a lot of these apps, while they offer you a new convenience that you didn't think possible, many times they also create more complexity when they don't work, especially when you tie in so much that they become major parts of your life and then they don't work. I hear a lot about, I got the new video doorbell, right? Not a bad idea. If you're away from home, or even if you're in the home, you could see who's at the door. You don't want to answer it, or it could be some danger. You never know. Okay, on its face, good idea. But I've heard a lot of people complaining. Oh, gosh, this video doorbell. Ugh. I hear this phrase a lot. More pain than good. More pain in the butt than good. I've been hearing that a lot more lately, and that's sort of the side point of my little discussion here today. Don't get sucked in by every new app. Yes, some of them are helpful, but don't be bombarded by every app that comes along, because it's just going to make your life more complex. Have a little vetting system, a little vetting process. Do I really need this? Is it really going to make a difference? Or is it just the new cool thing that I want to have because it makes me feel cool, or it makes me look cool to other people, or it, I'm just, once again, just jumping on every bandwagon of every new thing? Or do I really need it? There is a test of that. You could really actually test that and say, do I really need that? And as I said, I use that test. And when there are technologies that I say I really do need, I get them. But there's some other times when it's like, interesting, cool idea. I can certainly appreciate what this new technology or this new app may offer. But at the same time, I also look at it from a objective view and say, yeah, it's kind of cool, it's kind of interesting, but am I really going to use it, and do I really need it? And a lot of times I come out on the no side, and so I don't get it. And my life isn't any worse or any better for not doing it. But there are some technologies where, wow, this is a great thing. So to get to where I'm going with this, one thing that happened in the last week or so is something that I never expected to play such a major inconvenience without having for a while. But it did. It turned out to be not a major inconvenience, but enough to say, wow, I can't wait until this one gets fixed or we get a new one. I never would have thought that I was so dependent on it, but I was, and I only found out when I didn't have it. It's become so ubiquitous. It's become so natural to have one, and everyone does for a reason, because I believe it does provide a good service. But I didn't realize how tied in I was to it until we didn't have it. And it may surprise you. Kind of surprised me. The microwave oven. Yeah. The microwave oven. Ours had some kind of problem, and it wasn't working, and it just died. And it was relatively new. I wasn't happy about that, but we got that all straightened out. But so when it died, until a new one could be delivered and installed, because we have one above the range, and I'm not about to try to, I got to call the guy. So I had to call the guy to come in and install the microwave oven above the range, even though when I watched, it wasn't that hard because it was a newer one. We had a problem with our older one only about 2 or 3 years ago. So we got the same exact model of this one that didn't work and broke down. So all the brackets were in place. I mean, these guys, you know, all the holes to enforce it and hold it up in the cabinet below, they were all there. It was very simple. But still, there's a knack to do it. And so I called the guy. That's what I do. I call the guy, right? So but we didn't have one for about 4 or 5 days. And wow, what a shocker. I didn't realize just how dependent I was and my wife, both of us, were on this microwave. It doesn't seem like it's a main driver of our daily lifestyle, but we were able to survive without it. But the results weren't always as good as they could have been, and I found myself doing without certain things until we got it back. And when it was installed the other day, it was like, oh, we got our microwave back. The world is good again. The world is right again. The world is easy again. You know, I mean, it's amazing how that appliance does offer to me a great advantage. You know, it's just my wife and I, and so we do have some pre-prepared meals that we use. So those go right into the microwave for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So that's 2 minutes. You know, no getting out of the pan. And there's a main entree and some sides and things like that. It's a whole meal. You know, you throw that in the microwave and you hit 3 minutes or 5 minutes, whatever it is, and you're done. We haven't pulled out a skillet or a pan in years on a regular basis. Every so often, you know, maybe I'll make an omelet on my own or something like that. And my wife bakes quite a bit. But in terms of really cooking, you know, we don't really do it all that much with a skillet. It's all microwave done, whatever kind of food we have. Even when you warm stuff up, whether it's water or, you know, leftovers or whatever, you know, think about it. If you take a step back and think about in your daily routine how many times you go to that microwave for something. So that was a shocker. I was heating something up, right? Just heating it up. So I'm like, oh, this won't be bad. So I pull out the skillet, spray a little Pam on there, even though it supposedly has the Teflon. I'm still, you know, I don't believe it. We don't have one of the granite ones or the copper ones, the new ones where they don't stick apparently, or the diamond one. You see that? The new skillets with diamonds? I'm surprised women aren't wearing those around their necks. So we don't have the granite or the steel or the copper. We still have the good old Teflon. But I still use a little Pam just for some extra. So I put it on there, and I'm just warming up something. And I even get, you know, a top of a pot to put over the pan. So this way, I'm so used to this taking a quick amount of time that I think, well, it'll take just the same amount of time, only I have to do this little extra thing of getting the pan out and preparing the pan. And you realize how efficient the microwave oven is. You really do. And how well it works and how dependent you are on it. Because I'm just, you know, warming up something that should take nothing to do. In the microwave, I'd put it in there, I'd hit 2 minutes, and I'd be done. And it would be perfect. With this, I get the skillet out, I spray the Pam on there, I wait for the skillet to warm up, right? You got to wait for that. I'll tell you, I was sort of warming up a piece of pizza, right? put the pizza in there. And I don't really want, all I want to do is just kind of warm it up a little and get the cheese to get a little melty, right? You know, it was a you know, a thicker piece of pizza. But I like cold pizza, so that really doesn't matter to me. But I just wanted the cheese to get a little melted and you have a little warmth to it. You know, once again, you put it in the microwave for about a minute and that's perfect. So I'm just kind of equating that, like, well, it only takes a minute in the microwave, so maybe this will take just a minute as well, or 2 minutes, right? But there's an art to using a pan. And if you haven't done it in a while, you forget the art. So I spray my Pam. Of course, I have no patience, because I'm used to using my microwave. It takes 2 minutes, so I have no patience. So, of course, I put the, you know, the heat on the oven, or the stove at 9, you know, out of 10, so I can get this. Let's get this started. I'm instant gratification guy. So I should have known then, and I've once again, now I've learned my lesson. But it's been so long. So of course, the Pam is already in there. Now the pot's getting, you know, the skillet's getting warm. Because I put it, you know, the stove on high. So when I put that piece of pizza in there, there's kind of a sizzle. But I'm like, all right, no big deal. And I'm in this mindset of everything taking fast. I just want that cheese to melt. I'm not really looking into cooking this. I'm just kind of warming it up as I would in the microwave. So I put it down. There's a little sizzle, which there shouldn't have been, which I've learned. And I quickly put the top of the pot on there. And I'm going to wait about, you know, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, because I just want that cheese to melt. So I, you know, and the great thing about that whole thing, when you put the top on, you know, pot top on something, is the great reveal. You don't know what the hell's going on in there until you take it off. I think I've seen these on TV. Don't you think the top of pots should be clear, like Pyrex, so I could see in, so I can, why do I have to guess? Why do I have to be like a magician? Ba-ba-da-da, oh, cheese is burnt. Cheese is overly melted all over the skillet, or whoa, ba-ba-da-da, whoa, it's still frozen. I think every top of a pot should be see-through. Once again, a good technology here. Why not? I need as much information as I need. Why do I have to be surprised that the cheese either has over-melted and burned, or that it's not melting at all? Just a word to you pot top holders, makers, right? They should all be Pyrex. They should all be glass. I should be able to see through every top of every pot. Shouldn't have to guess. Shouldn't have to be a magician, you know, lifting it up to wonder what's in there after, if there's something's been cooking for about, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. So, of course, without my, I do my magician trick for my latest trick, ba-ba-da-da, I pull the top off, and sure enough, cheese is melted, maybe a little too much, but okay. So I scoop it up, put it on the plate. And it seems to be warm enough. As I said, I don't need it to be completely warm. I don't even mind it being a little, you know, cold. I like cold pizza. But the goal was to have the, you know, melted cheese. Oh my God. The top of it looked amazing. Nice gooey cheese. Everything looked fine. Until I took the first bite. I cut it with my knife and was ready for that nice taste. And oh my gosh, did I burn the bottom of that piece of pizza? Scorched it. Maybe not scorched. It didn't burn to the point where there was, you know, enough smell or, you know, burnt smell that I even knew I did it, but enough that it wasn't the taste I was expecting or wanting. And then when I expected it to be a little warmer, but then it was. So the cheese was melted, and that was all that was really done. except I scorched the bottom to a good, to a great extent. So then I sort of cut the bottom of the pizza off, which then didn't leave very much left. And it was very unsatisfying. Let's say that, you know, when you have some leftover pizza, you know, you, you, it's kind of like a nice little treat, right? The next day or so, a nice, it brings back a nice memory. It's certainly not as good as it was when you first ordered it and it was piping hot and right out of the oven, right? We all accept that. But with today's world, and especially with the microwave, we could come somewhat close. Sometimes, yes, when you warm up pizza, the microwave does, you know, it, it helps the, it, or it makes the original lose a lot of its crispness and integrity on that. But it's still at least warm and fast. And I am all about instant gratification. And this, warming this up, was, you know, a catastrophe. And I kind of wasted this piece of pizza that I was kind of looking forward to a couple, 3 days later, because I just was so not used to using a skillet anymore. I was so dependent on that. And my wife uses it to warm up water. I don't do that, but she does. And all of a sudden she's like, oh, well, I can't, you know, have that now. And just little things to the point where we were like, you know, I tried to warm some other things up and I did, because then I got very paranoid. So I was warming other things up with the skillet, and then I was putting it on so low that it, you know, the heat, it barely got heat. Most of it was just, you know, cold, and it was not good to the point where it's like, I'm done using this. So I ran out and bought some fruit. And just didn't have to cook anything for the last day or so. And I was shocked at how dependent I was on that microwave oven. I never thought that I used it, I never thought I used it as much as I do. I never knew how dependent I was on it in terms of the convenience and speed. And I certainly didn't realize how over the years the use of the microwave oven had certainly eroded my skills as a cook. I'm no gourmet, but I'm not bad around the stove. At least I was pretty good. My wife is the baker. I'm more of the cooker if we do cook things around. I usually cook. If we cook, she is the baker. But wow, the use of the microwave with its convenience and its speed really is a part of my life that I did not realize. And I was trying, and the funny thing is, I was trying, why I really came to appreciate the microwave and what it does is because I tried to transpose the advantages of the microwave onto the more traditional way of heating and cooking, and they don't work. The other way is longer, it takes time. There's more guesswork into it. There's kind of an art to it, just like Julia Child showed you. But it certainly, it takes more time, and you know, and there's a lot more to have to consider, like with this piece of pizza. I mean, I don't even think twice about warming up a piece of pizza in the microwave, right? You put it in there, you hit two or three, and you're done. But in warming up this piece of pizza, I realized, wow, did I screw this up? I should have had the heat on low so that the bottom didn't burn. I should have waited a good 5 minutes for that heat to go through the bottom and through the pizza. And then maybe another, so that maybe 5 minutes, 6 minutes to do that. And then if I really wanted to melt that cheese, then at the very end, I should have put the top on, let the steam melt the cheese, and we're done. Right? Now, I know that. I just told you the process. But I was so used to the speed of it. I mean, that. But if you do that, for when you start by taking the pan out and heating it up, and that whole process I just told you, waiting for the pan to warm up, not putting it on too hot, letting the pizza warm up slower from the outside in, and then finally melting the cheese. That would probably take 10 minutes. Now, is 10 minutes a lot of time? Certainly not. But in my world, it's taken a minute. By the time I had to have, if I would have correctly done it, I would have already had the piece of pizza eaten and off to be doing something else. It wouldn't have taken me 10 minutes to warm up a piece of pizza and eat it if I had the microwave. So in my mind, I was kind of using my microwave timing with this other process of cooking. And of course, it was an abysmal failure. So I did learn a lesson that, A, yes, the microwave does offer an advantage and something that I have come to, whether it's right or wrong, it's something that I now have adopted in my life. I will take speed and convenience, which we mostly do. And that's what technology offers us mostly. That's why we go toward the new technology. It offers convenience and speed and more precision. And certainly, you know, that's what the microwave does. You know, you put it on for 2 minutes and it's pretty well done the way you want it. With the skillet and the warming it up and all that, there's a little art to it. You have to take more time. You have to be a little more patient. You have to wait for, you know, this to cook the right way. So I'll tell you, if you would have told me I'm not going to have a microwave for 4 days, I would have thought no big deal. It turned out no microwave, huge deal. It took them a half hour to put it in and get it going. And as soon as the guys were done, I couldn't wait to get started. Oh, you know, they used a glass of water to test it. But I couldn't wait for them to leave for me to test it the real way. And oh my gosh, I hit that 2 minute button and hit start. And, you know, the little turntable moved. And when I pulled it out, it was sizzling and there was steam coming off and it took 2 minutes. And I said, life is good again. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. Thank you so much for downloading, clicking, scrolling, whatever it is you do to find us. Your continued loyalty and support is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 170. I certainly enjoy doing it because I'm Jim Toronto and I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. Hopefully you had a fun time. I certainly did. You have been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.